You're listening to the Product Podcast from Product School, featuring the best product leaders from Silicon Valley and beyond. If you're an aspiring product manager looking for your first PM role, or an experienced PM looking to level up your skills and advance your career, visit productschool.com to learn about our certificate courses and how we'll get you there. This episode is brought to you by ThoughtSpot, the modern analytics cloud company building a more fact-driven world with consumer-grade search and AI-driven analytics. With ThoughtSpot Everywhere, you can embed a highly interactive analytics experience into your data app and take your user adoption to the next level. Learn more and try ThoughtSpot for free today by visiting thoughtspot.com/everywhere. Today, we're joined by Nike product leader Julian Jones. He's here with us to help you make sure that all your hard work and effort is going into the right product. With his framework, you can estimate your business impact and be sure you're building the right thing, even if you don't have all the data you might want.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining. And thanks to Product School for hosting me. I'm really excited to share with you today about how to estimate product value. Before we get started, I want to share a little bit about myself. I am currently a product manager at Nike, and I work on omnichannel marketing, content, and personalization. So a lot of really cool stuff. In the past, my career has spanned video games, digital media, and streaming video. So a lot of cool stuff. And I currently live in Portland, Oregon. I threw up this favorite quote of mine, which is that, "Let me be smart enough to know how dumb I am and give me the courage to carry on anyway." That's a quote by Austin Kleon, a business author. And I use that to say, for today, the frameworks and the models I'm going to share with you have worked in my career. They work for pitching product, for thinking about how to improve a product and get alignment from stakeholders and all those things. But I don't have an MBA and I'm not a finance major. So hopefully what I share with you today is a good input into your growth as in your career. And yeah, let's go from there. Next is, I do need to disclaim that this presentation is based on my personal experience only and doesn't represent the views of my company or any other company. And all the data shown in this presentation is based on market research, assumptions, and publicly available information only. Cool. Let's go. In terms of what we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about sort of an intro to business value, what it is, why is it important, why is it important that we measure it? And then we'll go into a click down and talk about what is the mental framework that we should have when we think about business value in our companies or organizations. And then third, we'll really get into the meat of it. We'll talk about the actual model. How do you estimate business value and sort of a step-by-step process and how to build that model and what are some important things to consider. And then just some concluding thoughts. So hopefully this is going to be really cool. Okay, intro. I love this quote. It's by an author, Robert Thompson, Hooked on Customers. And he says, "Customer centricity should be about delivering value for customers that will eventually create value for the company." I love this quote because it sort of brings to mind two concepts. One is customer value, which is the value that is created for a customer. And then one is business value, which is the value created for a business. So today we're going to talk about the latter mainly, which is when we create value for a customer, what is the value that we get in return? And oftentimes those two things are intertwined, but when it comes to estimating the value and making decisions about what to do, we'll focus on the business value today. Now, why is estimating business value important? The reason why is because when we don't estimate business value, we end up building features based on vanity. We love them. We're copying other companies. We think we should build these things. We just want to build a cool product without really understanding what is the impact we're having. When you get into that state, you end up wasting resources. We don't have infinite resources as companies, and we need to try to make sure that we're investing our resources in the right things. And if you're not measuring or have a sense of what is the impact of what you're building, then it's easy to sort of like kind of be wasteful with the engineering or other resources we might have. Also, when you're kind of like building things based on what you think is cool or copying other companies or other things like that, you kind of deliver average value in the sense that some things you do will be really good because they're obvious. And then other things might not be so good because we thought that they would work really well, but they didn't. So you end up kind of delivering average value. And then the last thing is that when you don't estimate business value as a process in your company, you end up sort of making decisions that are very subjective. You say, hey, like maybe you might think, or other leaders in your company may think like, hey, I'm a good proxy for our customers. And so I have a good idea of what we need to build. We've all dealt with that. We've all been sort of guilty of doing that. And our leaders are too. When the leaders do it, we call that HIPPO, which is highest paid person's opinion. So these are all sort of the impacts if we don't estimate business value. We estimate business value so that we can work on high impact features. So when we know what is the impact of the work we're doing, we can index on the highest impact things. When you're working on high impact things, then you know that for the engineering resources or whatever resources you have, you know that you're going to be spending them wisely on kind of the most important things. Estimating business value also helps us do the right thing. It allows us to do the right thing by our customers and for the business. It allows us to understand building the right stuff versus not building the wrong stuff. And then lastly, it sort of allows the best ideas to win. So when you have a framework for quantifying the expected or estimated business value of a product, and you apply that framework to everything, then it doesn't matter whose ideas inform the products you build. If everyone in your company follows the same process, and you're able to say like, hey, of these 10 features, this one's going to deliver $1 million. This is going to deliver 500,000. Then whoever comes up with that best idea, that idea wins. And that's really important. So the goal of estimating business value is to go from what I sort of think about as low maturity or lower maturity product organization to a much higher maturity one. So we want to go from vanity features to high impact features. We want to go from wasting resources to spending those resources really wisely. We want to go from delivering average value to delivering industry-leading value for our customers and for the company. And we want to go from subjective HIPPO decision-making to having the best ideas win no matter where they come from, whether it's you as a product manager, an engineer, a QA analyst, or a leader. So that's the goal. Now, before we get into the next section, I thought a good exercise to level set is to, in your own time, reflect on a big feature that you're currently building or recently shipped. Set a 5 to 10 minute timer and answer some or all of the below questions. What was the feature or product? Why did you build it? What was your team's decision-making process? How did it perform compared to your expectations initially? And based on that, how would you rate your company's maturity when it comes to estimating business value? So just a good thing, food for thought. Okay, now let's go into our framework and business case. So we're going to start to click down and talk about the framework for estimating business value and then the model. And it's hard to talk about these things abstractly. So I tried to pick a company and product that I like that I have no association to sort of give us something to sink our teeth into. So the one I picked is Spotify. So this will be really fun. Let's go into the framework. Now, the framework here is sort of the mental model you should think about when you think about business value as it applies to your company. A couple of definitions first. The first one is this idea of leverage point. So leverage point is an organizational area where a change can affect business value. In Spotify's case, a couple examples might be their content strategy or their publisher tools. So these are any areas where if you do an activity, they contribute to business value. And a key thing here is that products love leverage points. So products act on leverage points to deliver business value. Within the content strategy at Spotify, those products would be those carousels you see in the app that say, hey, like, good evening, here are some recommendations, or here are your top shows, or here are some laid back beats. Those are examples of personalized music recommendations that are part of Spotify's content strategy and that sort of act on that strategy as a leverage point to deliver value for the customer and for the company. So the way that the estimated business value model works in this context is that it's a method for estimating the business value that a product will generate when it acts on its leverage point. So this is a little bit abstract. So a really good way to think about this is SpongeBob and his buddy. I forget his buddy's name, so apologies for any SpongeBob fans. But the way to think about these concepts altogether is basically like, imagine you have a seesaw. In the center is your leverage point. On the right-hand side is your business value. It's the thing you're trying to deliver. And on the left-hand side is your product, the product you want to build or the feature. Now, let's take that concept and apply it to some potential ideas for Spotify. One is this thing that doesn't exist, thankfully. It's a Spotify newsreader. Imagine if someone pitched this idea like, hey, Spotify should have a news app that you can read. We would look at that and we would say, hey, using our mental framework for business value, we don't think this is a good idea. And the reason why is because users don't want to read Spotify. We assume that. We also assume that news is kind of, news reading is kind of costly to produce. It's low margin. It relies on subscription revenue or viewable ad revenue. So in that case, the product is expensive. Your leverage point is high since you're focusing on your content strategy, but your success is probably going to be low just because customers don't want it. So we're not going to do it. Low negative value.
This episode is brought to you by ThoughtSpot, the modern analytics cloud company building a more fact-driven world with consumer-grade search and AI-driven analytics. Build stickier product experiences by embedding ThoughtSpot Everywhere's interactive analytics interface directly into your data app or product. No more delayed release cycles or incremental UX improvements. ThoughtSpot Everywhere's developer-friendly platform replaces static dashboards with an interactive data experience in minutes, allowing users to intuitively dig into their data and trigger actions in their favorite business apps. Learn more and try ThoughtSpot for free today by visiting thoughtspot.com/everywhere.
Alternatively, there's this idea of Spotify podcasts, which is a product that Spotify has today. In this context, for Spotify podcasts, we think this is a high value proposition. And the reason why is that listeners are adopting podcasts and migrating to platforms that offer great podcast experiences, like Apple, Stitcher, and Radio Republic. People's behaviors around audio listening are shifting. So they're sort of adopting podcasts more broadly. So it's an important space to play in. And for Spotify, this is a really good area because they have industry-leading personalization, publishing analytics, advertising capabilities, and brand recognition. So we think that, yes, like if they develop this product and sort of grow it, they're going to be able to lift their monthly active users and other key metrics in their business. So this seems like a good area to focus on. So we talked about the sort of mental framework for business value and how to think about it in the company like Spotify, but it's good to think about in your own company or your product or whatever context is important to you. So what I would do is reflect on your product or company, set a timer and answer a couple of these questions. Try to think about what are your company leverage points and how will your upcoming product or feature affect those leverage points? And are those leverage points high or low? Meaning the things you're going to work on, are they going to actually deliver the business value that will justify them? Okay, let's go into the nitty-gritty in the model itself. So what I'm going to share with you is the model that I built for Spotify, and I'll break down how I went about building it. The first thing I want to do is I'll show you the summary page. So I'll give you the sort of completed model. And then I'm going to work backward from there and show you how I built it and how you can apply this to your own company. So this is the completed estimate for the Spotify podcast business. It is the estimate for their incremental revenue from today going forward. So it doesn't estimate the total value of the podcast business, but more like the podcast business and its growth and its contribution to the baseline for Spotify going forward. So my range here is $330 to $830 million worldwide annually. It's a wide range, and we'll talk about why. And I also listed my assumptions here, which we'll talk about. So when you're building a model like this, where do you start? Like, how do you even get to this place for your product? Step one, open Google Docs or an Excel spreadsheet for your product and list your top line product metrics. So these are your known product metrics. They can be broad. If you're thinking about standing up a totally new vertical in your company, then your product metrics are going to be those top line company metrics like monthly active users, subscribers, revenue, customers, and so on, customer count. They can also be narrow. So it can be focused on your top line metrics for your website. Or they could be technical. So if you're sort of on the capability side of your company, they can be in like site performance or whatever. But no matter what your product is or what your focus is in this list of top line metrics, they need to ladder up onto financials, or they typically do. And sometimes that connection may not be obvious, especially if you're on the sort of engineering or capability side. But it is important to find out what those metrics are for your business, so that when you're prioritizing features as a product manager, you're prioritizing and comparing based on apples to apples. So you want to make sure that all the features you're building or thinking about, they sort of ladder up to those that same common denominator. In this case, for Spotify, it's revenue. So the second thing is, when you list out these metrics, you want to make sure to list out what are your data sources for these things. You need to be transparent so that your leaders can independently verify what they're seeing in the model. I had to make some assumptions here because I don't work for Spotify, so I don't have access to all of their internal data. But typically for these top line metrics, you should not need to make assumptions. On the third column here, you want to list out your baseline. So what is your today look like? I typically myself look for the most recent time period, like the most recent quarter, but the most recent quarter or so is the best. Step two. So once you have your static metrics, so you've talked to finance, you've looked in analytics and you've pulled out this data, and you have the static data, you then need to convert that static data into formulas so that when you change any of your key performance indicators, you can see how those changes affect your financials. This is necessary to be able to do forecasting. So for example, in case of ad-supported revenue, your average monthly listening time for Spotify equals the average, ad-supported revenue equals average monthly listening time times average ad-supported revenue per minute. So that's a little bit hard to understand. I think the easiest way to think about how to convert static data to formulas is using this example. So imagine your static metrics are you operate a fruit market and your revenue is $1,000 per month, let's say, and your total fruit sold is 1,000 pieces of fruit. So your total revenue per fruit is $1. That's your static metric. The formula for that would be fruit market revenue equals total number of fruit sold times the dollar revenue per fruit. So that's sort of how you do that conversion. And you need to do that for every piece of static data in your spreadsheet, or as many as you can. Okay. Once you've listed out your top line metrics and you've converted those to formulas, you need to then list out how your product or feature will affect those top line metrics based on your assumptions, market research, A/B testing, et cetera. So describe how your features affect those top line metrics. In this particular scenario, I made market research based assumptions about podcast consumption behavior worldwide and how that behavior is reflected in Spotify's products. A key thing here, assumptions are necessary for estimation purposes, but you need to work to eliminate them as you make progress on discovering and building your product. Assumptions represent risk and uncertainty in your product success. So they're necessary at the beginning when you're sort of like in discovery mode and you're trying to see whether this thing is worth building. But as you make progress to build your product or define it, you need to sort of narrow that uncertainty. So you need to work on eliminating your assumptions, but you can start with some, and I have them here. Step four. So I've gotten my top line metrics. I've converted them to formulas. I've added in the details about my product or feature. Then I want to show what is my range of estimates for how my product will perform. What is my conservative estimate? What is my neutral one? And what is my high or optimistic estimate? So you want to provide that range because we don't exactly know how this product will perform, but we can make some assumptions. And typically you want to, once you've sort of like put this all together, you want to make your decisions based on that low to neutral range. So your low range of this model needs to be compelling to build it. So once you have all this data, you have your assumptions, you want to apply those assumptions to your low, medium, and high columns. So for example, for Spotify, I have made some assumptions about how Spotify will contribute to, the podcast will contribute to Spotify's organic MAU growth rate. I've also made some assumptions about the growth in the podcast engagement rate for Spotify. Same thing, average listening time, I've made some assumptions there, and assumptions around podcast completion rate. And I've also made some assumptions around, or estimates around royalty payments. Once you've built this model, make sure to check your formulas in your math. So a good way to do this is by changing your variables and see how that affects the model. You'll notice issues really quickly. So as an example here, I'm changing my podcast engagement rate to see how that affects the model. Early on, I did notice issues with this. So I made sure to correct those. So make sure to check that math really well, because you're about to make decisions based on this model. When you share this model out, make sure to give your business leaders the ability to change the variables so that they can test drive your model. Don't just hand them a static spreadsheet with all the data just printed out. Make sure that they can actually manipulate the model. Provide the summary page for those who kind of just makes it easier to present, and make sure to describe your key assumptions here. So for Spotify, a couple examples are, Spotify doesn't pay royalty payments for podcast streams. So the increasing ratio of podcast streaming compared to music streaming will decrease Spotify's quarterly royalty payments and improve their gross margin. I've also described how I have assumptions around the podcast business contribution to their MAU growth, and also assumptions around podcast consumption and music consumption on Spotify to contribute to these numbers. So that's it. So what did we talk about today? An estimated business value model is a method to estimate the business value that a product will generate when it acts on its leverage point. We estimate business value so that we can work on high impact features, spend resources wisely, do the right thing, build the right stuff, don't build the wrong stuff, and allow the best ideas to win. An estimated business value model is a starting point. It helps you understand the potential impact of your product or feature compared to other things you're planning. It helps you identify your key assumptions, and assumptions help inform your learning agenda, i.e. an assumption is a hypothesis that you need to validate with your own internal A/B testing, qualitative and quantitative research. So it's a starting point. These models help you justify, quantify your work to business leaders, teammates, and stakeholders. It's not 100% accurate, and it isn't meant to be, but you need to strive for higher accuracy over time, where by the time you launch your product or post-launch, your model needs to basically be really tight so that you can evaluate product performance. And these models get easier with practice. They, you know, when you first start out, You don't know where your data is. You don't know how to build these formulas. It's very confusing. It takes weeks. Just practice. Start small. Start with easy features and kind of work up. They do get easier with practice. And that was basically it. I hope this was really helpful. I know it was a lot to digest and I do talk fast. Apologies for that. And I want to reiterate, I'm not a finance major or an MBA candidate or anyone like that. This approach has worked for me really well in the companies I work for. They're great at aligning stakeholders. They're great at prioritizing features when the prioritization isn't obvious. They're great for kind of providing your teammates with sort of an idea into what is the impact of the things you're planning. So it's a really good approach, and I hope you have the chance to try it out. And good luck. And thanks again to Product School for everything. I'm looking forward to hearing everybody's feedback here. Thanks a lot. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Product Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, it would mean the world to us if you would rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Taking the time to write just a few sentences about what you love most about the show will help us improve it and reach even more product people around the world. And when you're done, why not reward yourself with some free product management content and resources over at productschool.com? Until next time, stay product-led.